Grateful that Craig's story will emerge from this verse, these two verses from Micah, these words of prophecy that are come to us from 8th century Judah and still have so much resonance with our life today. To set the stage a little bit for you, earlier in this little book, Micah has laid out the problem at this particular moment in Israel's history. There are a lot of religiously devoted people in Judah. They are loudly and publicly religious, and they use their rituals and practices to prop up corrupt leaders and to amass power. And in Micah 8, we see God put these people in their place. People who think they control God's action among them, who have political power and money and positions of authority, they now get to plead their case in front of the mountains. God sets them before the majesty and enduring power of tectonic plates and million-year-old stars. Guess who's actually in control? Who is the source of all of this power and glory? Not this handful of powerful leaders in Judah. But God's complaint isn't to lord over Israel. It comes from this longing desire for God's people to remember who they are and whose they are. God rescued them from Egypt. God saved them from countless times of destruction before armies. God has loved them well. And so just before Micah 6:8, we get these few words of confession. The people messed up. And so how can they show God their love and commitment? Their answer is the sacrificial system, to pick up the religious devotion to a new level, more sacrifices. But then Micah reminds the people that God doesn't need an over-the-top display of piety. God doesn't need more stuff. That's not what is at the heart of the law of Moses. That's not the purpose of the temple. Everything that God has given God's people is meant to draw them into God's life and to live every moment of that life from inside. Their religious practice is to inform their lives and to shape them as full human beings, to do justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with God.
Thank you, Melissa, for that. It's humbling to be before you and to share a little bit with you. And I want to thank Debbie for asking me. You know, when she did, you know, I hesitated because I don't. This isn't a natural forum for me, but I have learned over time that, to the best of my ability, you know, when someone asks me to be of service, that I say yes. And so certainly this is within my capacity to be here, even if it's not within my comfort zone. So I want to thank her for that as well. And I also want to thank Ann Robertson for giving a preview last week, unknowingly that Micah 6:8 was going to be the scripture for this week, but she incorporated that into her sharing as well, which was just it was good to hear. When I think about this passage, let me back up. So when I was younger, a child, I read the Bible two or three times, probably. Front to back, page, every page. And but they, you know, to a large degree, they were just words on the page. And I didn't understand the larger meaning of those words and the deeper meaning of those words. And so, you know, whatever sort of import was in this one passage was lost on me. And it wasn't until I was in college that I became at Bethel. I was at Bethel College, and probably in my first year, where I was introduced to this passage, and it became among my peers, my peer group, my cohort at school. It was an important passage for us, and we were an active cohort, certainly vocal cohort. I mean, I can't compare it to other cohorts because I wasn't, but we were vocal. And somewhere I lost track of this passage, of the meaning of this passage. And for me, the biggest impediment to my understanding this passage is myself, is my regard for myself, and my concern with having my desires satisfied and my wants met and my needs met, over and above the concerns of other people. I have been in recovery for a while, and from alcoholism, and in that journey, it gave me a renewed understanding of this passage, of what it really is saying to me. There's a there's a big emphasis in recovery on identifying and removing our character defects. And, you know, in the literature, there's a big, it's basically a question of sin, of transgressions, of defects of character, and so forth. And one of the biggest drivers of those character defects, certainly for me, is a fear that I will not get something I want, fear that I will lose something or lose something that I already have. And those two things are powerful drivers of my defects of character, my disregard of other people. And so identifying those things and dealing with those fears in sort of the large, in the abstract, is easy enough for me. I mean, it's easy enough for me to say, you know, to in prayer ask God to remove my fears. But where the rubber meets the road for me is in my daily conduct, in my behavior in the world, in how I act with people I love and with people maybe I don't love so much, people who are philosophically or theoretically at odds with what I believe. That's when it becomes far more difficult to have those fears removed. And so, you know, I do believe that if I ask that God will remove my fears and you know, my those defects of character, but I also believe that if I am unwilling to do that myself, if I am unwilling to change my conduct, that I have the freedom to do that. And so coming back and being reminded that the grace that has permitted me to have a reprieve from my suffering, from the disease of alcoholism, and from a reprieve from those fears. That grace is not doing it for my benefit. I don't believe that I am, you know, sober today just for my own edification. And the blessings that I have received are not for my enjoyment, but really the purpose is to make me ready to be of maximum service to God and to my fellows. And when I go back to this passage again, this is a powerful reminder that, you know, in all the passages that, in all the prescriptions where I am not to do, you know, something, that there, you know, thou shalt not do this and that and this other thing. Here is a positive action. Here are positive actions that I am called upon to undertake, to act with justice and to act with kindness and to act with humility and all of that in this walk with God. And so that's a powerful recipe for my life, to a powerful reminder of what I'm called upon to be and to do. I was reminded, and I can't remember the passage now, but I was reminded of the parable of the sheep and the goats, which I also like, in which in Matthew, it might be Matthew 25, I don't remember, but anyway, Jesus is describing the separating the sheep and the goats, and the sheep are those who, when they saw Jesus, they fed him. When he was hungry, they fed him. When he was naked, they clothed him. When he was in prison, they visited him. And the sheep, the righteous, say, you know, when did we see you hungry, or when were you a stranger, and when were you in prison? We didn't do any of these things. And Jesus says, you know, when you did any of these for the least of us, basically, you did it for me. And it's again that idea of being of justice, of doing justice, of acting justly and loving mercy and kindness in the world at large is a spiritual enterprise. It is not just a, you know, sort of an ethical thing to do, but it is really a spiritual enterprise for me anyway. It is acting in a way that is contrary to my it is acting in a way that is contrary to my instincts. My instincts are to preserve what I have and to take more of what I think I need. And it plays out in all kinds of, like, honestly, weird and petty ways. You know, being worried that I'm not going to get to that light before it turns yellow or red. Right, I'm driving up, or, you know, if someone's coming up and passing me, it's wanting to be in front of them. It's if I'm at line in the store and someone in front of me is taking too long, irritation at them making me wait. Do you not know that I have important things to do and you are here in my way? And would you please, in all kinds of, like, daily interactions, I am challenged to act with justice and act with kindness and act with humility, and that is difficult. because I am afraid that I'm not going to get what I want, that I will not be taken care of. And the funny thing is that in the 24 years that I've been trying to do this, I have never not been taken care of. Never. And when I was first getting sober, it was enough for me to be fed and be watered and have a roof over my head. That was enough. That was the place where I was when I began this journey. That I was fed, I had a roof over my head, which wasn't mine, but that's a different story. I was fed, I was watered, and I had a roof over my head, and that was enough. And so I've never not been taken care of in this journey. And the times that I feel the worst and the most separated from God are the times when I am trying to enforce my will in a situation, when I am trying to control a situation so that it benefits me. That is when I feel the most separated from God. And it is because I'm not letting God, I'm not trusting God with the results of my actions. I do not believe in that moment. I do not have the faith in that moment that I will be taken care of. And so all of this, all of these little actions, these are spiritual for me. They're spiritual activities, they're spiritual enterprises. And it all comes back to this passage that God has shown me what is good and has shown me what is required of me. And that is to act justly and to love kindness, love mercy, and to walk humbly with my God. And for me, it means that I don't know everything, that I have to remain teachable, that I have to ask other people for help and to take their suggestions, even though I am sure that it is not going to have the outcome I want, even though I am positive that this time it won't work. If I do God's will this time, this time it won't work. Even though I have no evidence to prove that in my past. In fact, I have all the evidence to prove the contrary. Even through loss and hardship and whatever, I've always been taken care of. And so as I think about this passage, I'm again reminded that my recovery and my life is not for my own benefit. That really any success I have is really bearing witness to the grace that helped me be in this place today. And so I want to thank everybody for being here as well. And I'm reminded that we're all in this spiritual enterprise together. And it just to see so many, I have you all on in the gallery view. And so I see a lot of your faces, and it's just a blessing to be surrounded by so many friends. And so I will keep coming back. Thank you.